The theater critic Friedrich Luft experienced the end of the war in a basement. Down in a villa near Nollendorfplatz in Berlin, he had sat out the last few days of the final battle with a few other local people amidst the smell of smoke, blood, sweat, and gunpowder. It was safer in the basement than in the apartments, exposed as they were to crossfire between the Red Army and the Wehrmacht. Luft recalled the day that the Red Army arrived in Berlin. It was an inferno outside. If you peered out, you saw a helpless German tank pushing its way through the blazing rows of houses, stopping, firing, turning round. Every now and again, a civilian, darting from shelter to shelter, stumbled along badly bombed streets. A mother with her pram rushed from a bullet-riddled, burning house towards the nearest bunker. An old man who had been crouching near the basement window was shredded by shrapnel. On one occasion, a few soldiers from an office in Wehrmacht Supreme Command drifted in, irritated, discouraged, sick fellows. Each of them carried a cardboard box of civilian clothing, so that they could disappear in an emergency, as they said. How much emergency was still to come? Just clear off, the inhabitants of the basement hissed. No one wanted to be near them as the end approached. At one point, the corpse of the feared local Nazi block warden was carried past in a wheelbarrow. He had thrown himself out of a window. Suddenly, it occurred to someone that there was a pile of swastika flags and pictures of Hitler stored in the house opposite. A few brave people went over to burn everything, to get rid of it before the Russians came. When the gunfire suddenly grew louder again and the theater critic looked cautiously out of the basement door, he saw an SS patrol also peering over a remnant of wall. The men were still combing the area in search of shirkers that they could take with them to their deaths. Then it became quieter. As we carefully climbed the narrow steps towards an eternity of listening and waiting, it rained softly. On houses beyond Nollendorfplatz, we saw white flags gleaming. We wrapped white rags around our arms. Then two Russians climbed over the same low wall over which the SS men had come so menacingly just a few moments before. We raised our arms. We pointed at our armbands. They waved us away. They were smiling. The war was over. For Friedrich Luft, the end of the war, later to be called Zero Hour by some, had struck on 30 April. In Aachen, 640 kilometers west of Berlin, the war had already been over for 6 months. It had been the first German city to be taken by the Americans in October 1944. In Duisburg, the war had been over in the districts to the west of the Rhine since 28 March, but on the east of the Rhine it raged for another 16 days. There are even three dates for the official capitulation of Germany. General Oberst Alfred Jodl signed the unconditional surrender on 7 May in Reims, in the headquarters of U.S. General Dwight D. Eisenhower. Even though the document expressly acknowledged the Western Allies and the Red Army as the victors, Joseph Stalin insisted that the ceremony be repeated. So on 9 May, Germany capitulated again. This time, General Field Marshal Wilhelm Keitel signed the document in the Soviet headquarters in Berlin-Karlshorst. And for the history books, the victorious powers agreed on the day in between, 8 May, on which nothing had actually happened at all. For Walter Eiling, Zero Hour still hadn't arrived 4 years later, at which time he was still in Ziegenhain prison for crimes against the Ordnance on Antisocial Parasites. The waiter from Hesse had been arrested in 1942 for buying a goose, 3 chickens, and 10 pounds of salted meat at Christmas. A special Nazi court had sentenced him to 8 years of imprisonment, followed by preventive detention for violation of the war economy regulations. After the end of the war, Walter Eiling and his family had believed that he would be swiftly released. But it didn't even occur to the legal authorities to review his case. When the justice minister of the region of Greater Hesse, under American military supervision, finally rescinded the absurdly severe punishment, his office insisted that the imprisonment had been repealed but not the preventive detention. Walter Eiling remained in prison. Later applications for release were rejected on the grounds that the prisoner was unstable, inclined towards arrogance, and not yet capable of returning to work.